Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
A sole arbitrator, I find in a difficult case, is quite alone. It's actually quite a risk, particularly if he hasn't, or she, and it's mostly he is, but sometimes she is, if he hasn't done confronted that particular situation before.
Before his untimely death at age 59 in October 2008, Thomas Walda was a leading scholar and practitioner in the field of international energy and resources law and arbitration. Shortly before his death, Thomas and I sat down at his home near the St. Andrews Golf Course to record a podcast that we had conceived over dinner. The idea was to capture the sort of illuminating yet frustrating conversations that often occur when parties are attempting to form an international tribunal on the basis of imperfect information, mainly hearsay and gossip. Of course, knowing Thomas, our discussion went off in different digressions of areas of interest for us both. So I posted a segment of our conversation on arbitration advocacy as IDN 47 6 months ago in October 2008. I've divided the rest of this recording into three episodes about international arbitral tribunals, their formation, and how they work together. In the first of these episodes this week, Thomas discusses the dynamics of tribunals, including the advantages and disadvantages of one versus three arbitrators, the decision-making process that goes on with three arbitrators and how it's influenced by the dynamics among the tribunal, and some innovative ideas that might be useful for establishing tribunals in the future. All of this adds up to a summary of a significant part of Thomas's work, to improve the imperfect world of international arbitration.
I would find much more comfortable generally in a reasonably functioning three-people tribunal than being the sole arbitrator just by myself. And I've known situations where I said these colleagues of mine would have been better off had they been, even if the two co-arbitrators rebrowses the party's views, at least there is a way of discussing in relative informality. When I was a clerk or trainee at the 23rd Civil Chambers at the court in Frankfurt, Landgericht Frankfurt, in 1976, I remember the chairman of my chambers or panel, he didn't listen much to the judges on his panel, but he listened to his wife. So whenever his wife gave him advice how standards of negligence should be applied, that is where he was following. But again, it shows the need for us to kind of discuss a little bit, discuss how we are going to move forward in a difficult situation. So I think the three-person tribunal has a lot of advantages.
But do you think it also has
one,
a risk?
Before I come to this, there's also one important feature I found. If the two arbitrators appoint the chair, usually it works better because the chair will be grateful to the two. In fact, it's very funny. I've done an appointment with my co-arbitrator, and within seconds, the other co-arbitrator already was calling the chair to say that, you know, we appointed you, and I was coming 25 seconds later.
No, I was the one.
Yeah. So, but it's clearly there is the chair is owes his appointment to the two, and that should create, I mean, it doesn't always create, you get a psychopath, things will be different, but it does create a certain bond and a human loyalty. Whilst if the parties, or even more, if there is an appointing party imposing a chair, then you're really setting up a multinational team of people, multicultural, multinational, who've never met each other, often before. And that is likely to provide for a much less congenial atmosphere.
But do you think that having the three-person tribunal also contributes to a more Solomonic approach to outcomes?
Yeah, well,
because you do see that a fair amount, that in the three, that something has to be given to one of the arbitrators, and whether sometimes I've seen it being just legal fees, let's say, where, you know, one side prevails, and what I often see get sacrificed is, well, you didn't recover all your legal fees. Or, you
know, well, this is human.
Or interest or something else out there.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's disputed. I mean, there are colleagues of mine who say, there is a colleague, senior colleague, and I've heard that he said, when I get appointed, I forget who appointed me. Now, I mean, that seems to me actually very difficult. I also see a lot of co-arbitrators appointed by who are friends of counsel. So, I mean, a certain loyalty bond, the party appoints you not because of your tremendous great legal expertise, because they think they can improve your chances of winning, and you know that. So there is a pressure, less with some people, more with other people. But it also means that in the bargaining or in the dynamics of a tribunal, when it works well, you know, when someone has alienated everybody, then he's not going to get anything, naturally. But if it works well, there will be a dynamic to make a compromise. And since many things in law and facts are ambiguous, there are ways. Which really means that if you have an absolutely foolproof case, which to my mind all claimants or parties think they have, but they don't understand what's coming out of the woodwork as the case proceeds. But if you had really the objectively winning case, you might perhaps better off be to go before a court than a three-person tribunal. The only thing is I've never met a case where the parties were not convinced that they were bound to win. And then all sorts of things happen. All the facts that your own client has not disclosed to you, the facts in your own company suddenly come out. You didn't. You as in-house lawyer, they have not told you secrets.
You know, it happens all the time. But we're getting a little bit of field of the core here of the question here, which is that there is a degree of you know, applying Solomon's justice at times, and you know, you. I guess that is a potential downside to the three-person tribunal. You avoid maybe some extreme results because there's a balancing effect, but then you also get a compromise solution sometimes that's otherwise difficult to explain.
Yes, I think that's when you choose arbitration, you have to understand. You have to understand the dynamics. They're different from a court. You go to an Italian court, when I listen to you, you tell me you're not going to get a judgment for 10 years. Now, if you get a good judgment for you in 10 years, is it worthwhile the trouble? But if you go to an arbitral tribunal, you get a judgment faster. I'm not saying you get it in 2 weeks, but it will take 2 years as well. But then you are getting a different dynamics than you would get before an Italian court or a German court or a British court.
How long do you think, I've been asking people this question. Actually, I've been working on CPR's expedited arbitration rules for commercial arbitration. And I've been asking people an interesting question, or interesting answers anyways. How long should a normal arbitration take of a $5 million, $10 million dispute, moderate complexity?
Well, it depends what kind of...
It depends is not one of the allowed answers.
Well, if you want it fast, and I formulate it without
this.
Using...
No, without this. How long just in normal, without any, just a general average... How long should it take is the first question. And then I ask the question, how long should an expedited arbitration
take?
Well,
let's say 12 to 24 months.
For the normal arbitration.
But if you want to have it fast, then you can steer it. If you have a reasonably good working relationship with the other party and they have the same objective of running it fast and efficiently, I would assume you can probably get it done in 6 months. You take arbitrators, let's say, from the same city who don't have to travel. You take arbitrators who are not over busy, so they can devote time. And you can take people who are known to be kind of decisive and rapid. But if you take an arbitrator from Asia and you take an arbitrator from America and you take an arbitrator from Europe, and they're all very busy people, then we are already talking about 2 to 3 years. Because how do they find times in their schedules? They have to travel to each other at least once or twice. I mean, you can do a lot now. You can do by telephone conference or video conference. But so you, in a way, you have it in your own control. The speed and the cost is part of your own, is partly what you want, and to the extent you have an understanding the other party, the other side. If the other side says, well, I would like to, we don't have money, we don't want to pay, our cash flow is bad.
Or we just don't want to go fast.
Yeah. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. There's so many ways to delay. You can challenge jurisdiction. You challenge the arbitrators. You bring in experts. You challenge experts. You ask for extensions. You suddenly have a crisis in your law firm. What I said is you can do it in
dog,
six.
The dog ate my homework.
Yeah. I've had expenses of. I've had the excuses that the computer kind of went up in flames or whatever. But I think you can do the same dispute can be done in 6 months, which would be exceptionally, but it can also go 3 or 4 years.
Okay. So, but an average for you would be what, about 2 years? A year?
1.5, 18 to 24 months.
18 to 24 months.
It's also when you take ARBA, for example, I have always thought that one of the advantages of courts is that they are judges who go to their job every day, or most of the time. They live in the same city, and they've worked together. They've established working routines. Now, that is rare in arbitration, though the arbitration culture creates kind of somewhat of an equivalent. I've always thought, why don't the arbitral institutions offer pre-standing tribunals, not just one person, and then the third, but why don't they offer a tribunal of three who are already have worked together? And so you would go to that standing tribunal because that should provide greater speed and efficiency.
I've actually heard a proposal by an institution that is considering opening up a similar service.
Means you'd be moving closer to the court. You would, in essence, have a standing court panel, waiting for you. Now, the problem is that the judges get their salary all the time, but that standing tribunal isn't people who get a salary. They have to kind of do a number of cases to earn their living. So it's not as easy, but to my mind, it is worthwhile experimenting with it. And if you have a good relation with the other counsel, you are both professional, you could basically say, let's take three people from Paris, whom we know have been together as an arbitral tribunal before. I can tell you, I've worked in one panel, and we get along very well, and we'd be very well in working together as a team again. But nobody, as far as I can see, ever has paid attention to this.
It's an interesting proposal.
Say, how did he do as an arbitrator, but you say, found a tribunal over the last 5 years, clearly has worked well.
But it goes to predictability, right? You want to sign up for it, and you say, look, I know what I'm getting into. I will sign up with that institution. I'll get that tribunal. And if you could get the other party to agree with that, I think it's an actual interesting solution.
You are now putting A, B, and C together. It's like a football team, you see. You're not asking just for Maradona or what the Brazilian call the Ronaldinho or whatever.
Ronaldinho.
Yeah. But you're asking actually for a team which has worked together. I'm not sure if users do this, but it seems to make to me eminent sense.
In next week's episode, Thomas discusses the different characteristics that parties may wish to have in mind when naming an arbitrator. Then finally, the third episode puts these ideas to the test, and we go through a list of different names.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.